The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to One Session at a Time. It's your host, DJ Luz, and today we're going to be diving into the raw, unfiltered truth of what it's really like to grow up in therapy. No filter, just real life experiences and the journey of figuring it out, one session at a time. Welcome back to episode 7. Today's episode is a special one, and honestly one I've been looking forward to for a long time. We'll be taking a deeper look into the world of therapy, what it is, what it isn't, and what it looks like from the perspective of someone who does this work every single day. And the best part? We get to hear directly from a professional who not only brings expertise, but also genuine heart to this work. Today, we're joined by a licensed therapist who's here to share her journey into the field, what inspires her, and the kind of insight most people never get to hear. This conversation is all about understanding mental health through a real human lens. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest.
What a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. And I do really feel passion, heart, and soul about therapy. So I'm really glad to hear that you mentioned that.
I agree, because that's what therapy is all about. So before we dive in and talk about therapy as a whole and how powerful it can really be, can you tell listeners a little bit about who you are and what kind of therapy you practice?
Sure. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I've had my license for well over 20 years. Right now, I'm working as a clinician, so I still see clients, as well as a manager for over 30 therapists in a mid-sized company. And I'm also involved in a lot of training, and I do continuing education units. And I also do some policy work of helping to design some of the workings of the company.
That's great. You know, on this podcast, we've talked a lot about how there's a bunch of different kinds of therapy, whether that's family marriage, working with kids, and so on. So I think it's great to hear your experience and what you specifically work in. Speaking more about yourself, what inspired you to become a therapist?
I think I was always intrigued by how people are who they are and how they relate to themselves, how they relate to each other, how they relate to the world. I grew up kind of a natural counselor in my family, which I think is the story of a lot of therapists, is that we grow up kind of in that role as a confidant and sometimes as a mediator. And sometimes as somebody that just is on the front lines of trying to connect people together. And I felt like that in my family. So that was the beginnings of it. And then I just always had that interest throughout my life.
Yeah, that's very cool. I think I kind of can relate. I don't know if I would say I was the family therapist, but I always kind of had interest in speaking and talking with people, especially my friends. So I think that's really cool. I think also that you naturally felt that from a younger age. Talking about therapy in, I think, a broader context, and especially the stereotypes and stigmas that are related to therapy, what would you tell someone who was thinking about going into therapy? What would you tell them?
As a clinician that might be interested in going into therapy, it's a very exciting time in the field because we know a lot more about physiology. We know a lot more about the workings of the brain. There's a lot more evidence-based tools than we've ever had before, and we get to see real progress because of those tools. I think that there's a lot of ways that when they look at any research study, no matter what it is, it's always the therapeutic alliance and the intimacy and trust that clients build with their clinician that makes the difference. So it's interesting when you think about that with AI, because I think a lot of times people are talking about developing those kinds of relationships, but I have a lot of faith in the future in the field. And I think it's because the therapeutic alliance or the relationship that a client has with the therapist is really the number one predictor of success.
Yeah, and that's something that I talked about in a previous episode is that, you know, it's so much more than this two sessions a week type of situation, but it's actually something that requires trust and connection and this deeper relationship. And so from that, the individual is able to make progress and really thrive. And that's a really important point that you made that I think a lot of people forget about. And with you just mentioning AI and, you know, how AI has become this center focus in, I guess, our current day world, there's a lot of online platforms and things like that that actually offer therapy. And so one thing that I've always said is it requires a good fit. These days, you're able to, you know, look up therapists near me and you can really find hundreds of options. But it's all about finding the right fit, someone who's professional and really knows what they're doing. And so what would you say someone should look for when trying to find a therapist or choosing a therapist?
Yeah, that's a great question because it can be complex. Like you could be looking for somebody who has a specialty in whatever it is the issue is that you would like to have resolved. Like let's say that you are struggling with eating disorders or somebody who's struggling with relationship issues with their partner. So you might want to look for somebody that has some kind of a background or expertise. I think it's like a lot of fields now, you know, with doctors and in different fields, there's becoming more people that are specializing in particular aspects of the field. But I think, again, getting back to what we were talking about before, I think the fit matters more than the letters after someone's name or even their training. And so looking for someone and maybe even interviewing them once, somebody who makes you feel safe, who you feel like you can talk to openly, who respects your cultural background, who respects your goals, and there has to be trust. You can have the most credentialed therapist in the world, but if you don't feel seen or understood, then the work won't be meaningful. And I don't think a lot of times it'll be very helpful, quite frankly.
Yeah, and that's really powerful that you said that. And I think it's so true. I think even with my experience of going to different therapists and of course at different ages, it's really the connection and trust and relationship that you're able to build with them that really makes therapy worthwhile. Now speaking in a even broader context, a little bit away from that, you know, therapists often carry a lot. I mean, the people, you know, who go to therapists are often dealing with really heavy things. So I guess my question is, how do you take care of your own mental health while having to help multiple people a day, you know, multiple times a week? How are you able to take care of yourself?
Well, like you're saying, I mean, therapists need therapy tools too. And I wish that what we learn in graduate school was taught in high school. I wish it was taught to everyone, the communication skills, maybe even in grammar school. I mean, I think almost it's kind of an irony. I think sometimes in kindergarten where they teach about sharing and about how to deal with conflict and how to get along with people and also to how to have a nice relationship with yourself and be able to express emotions. I think it comes down to that a lot of times. And I try to practice what I preach. You know, I set boundaries. I check in with myself. I try to stay connected to people who ground me, who I feel really understand me and care for me. And I use mindfulness, kind of keeping an eye on when I do feel something to be curious about it and really explore it. And then just the regular things of diet, exercise, taking breaks throughout the day. It's a very intimate conversation of what we're doing. And I'm very honored to be a part of it. But there is a way that I do need time to sort of digest and rest and also rely on consultation.
That makes complete sense. And I really appreciate you, you know, giving us insight on that too. I think a lot of times we look at one side of the equation, but we don't look at the equation as a whole. And that's not, you know, an experience many of us are familiar with or really think about when thinking of therapy. So I appreciate you, you know, sharing your own experience with that because I think that's extremely important as well.
Yeah, the other thing, I'm going to add one other thing, if you don't mind. The other thing is that the approach that I use with my clients, I use with myself, which is a strength-based model, is that there's a lot of evidence that positive psychology, looking at things from the state of what do you value and where do you have resiliency, where are you able to really feel like you can be authentic and genuine and honest with people? And you can connect with them meaningfully, where you feel like there is an intimacy and understanding, I think is really healthy and healing. And I try to practice that too in terms of a mindset. And I found that incredibly valuable. I've learned a lot from my clients about that, because at the heart of it, I'm a humanist. And I think people have a lot of wisdom about how to heal and where they need to go and how they can start to feel like they can live a life that they really believe in and that feels authentic to them.
That's so true. And that's really a part of healing that we don't think about a lot. And so, thinking about mental health, you know, because mental health is a huge part of therapy, what is something that you wished more families understood about mental health? Do you feel that with your clients a lot of time is mental health, you know, if someone's struggling mentally, do they see that as something that's a weakness? How do they view that? Or what do you wish that more families understood surrounding mental health?
I think there still is a stigma. I think there still is a way that people feel like they're falling short, or maybe frustrated with other people because they have kind of a way of not being able to connect well together. And I think that at the heart of it, especially for families, it's kind of this thing of that you want to be able to be yourself and you want to feel comfortable and you want to be genuine and you want to express yourself. But on the other hand, the other challenge is, and this is something I talk about a lot, especially with the couples work that I do, is that honoring the perspective of someone else, and that it isn't so much about that you can't have two different perspectives, but it doesn't mean that the sum isn't greater than the parts. And I think that if I thought in terms of what could be helpful for families is having that culture of optimism, and that we can work it out and that we can talk about different perspectives. It isn't so much about having to change people's perspective. It's more, how can we collaborate, coordinate, and figure out some ways that the sum can be greater than the parts.
I love that. I love that a lot.
It's true, though. I talk about that so much, is that about, it's okay. People have different perspectives and that's okay. But you can always speak from your own heart and what you think of. And then also from your needs, like what is it that you would like to request, or what do you think might be helpful in this situation? And then be willing to collaborate.
I love that. So now that we're coming to a close, I wanted to ask you one final thing that I think everyone, myself, the listener, can really appreciate and really look at when they leave this episode, is what's one thing that you hope listeners take away from everything you said, everything you shared, or just therapy as an entire experience?
I kind of wish that people would understand that they have a lot of inherent wisdom. And I think I first discovered this when I worked in middle schools and I was working with kids that are just transitioning from childhood into adolescence. And I was always amazed because I worked with children that had these incredibly traumatic backgrounds. And yet they always had this wisdom about what it was that they needed to work on and how they could grow. And I guess what I hope people take away is that they can have that kind of faith and trust in that, along with also a wise mind of their values or their morals or their deeply held beliefs. And that along that path, and I do think therapy can be incredibly helpful because we have such extensive training in some different ways of being able to think about things and some healing ways to be able to resolve traumas and past difficulties, that I hope that there's a sense of confidence and trust in kind of the journey if the person shows up wanting to continue to grow and make changes and come into their own and really blossom, which is kind of what we get to usher and curate along the way.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your insight, your experience, and the heart behind the work that you do. It reminds us as listeners that therapy isn't just a meeting that happens once a week, but it's a beautiful, meaningful process that exists to support people in their growth and healing. Your perspective really brought that to life. So truly, thank you. It's been an honor having you on. And to everyone out there listening, I hope this conversation encouraged you in some way to take that first step, or at least to see therapy in a new light. Thank you for being here, and I hope you tune in next week as we come closer to the end of one session at a time. But for now, remember to take care of yourself first, and to move through everything step by step, moment by moment, or as I like to say, one session at a time.